Hello and welcome to the STEM Untapped podcast. I'm Izzy, your host, and this week I'm joined by two A-level students, Jess and also Izzy. This episode, we're interviewing Dr. Jo Muller, a clinical psychologist.
I think we both chose to interview you because we're both wanting to go into psychology. We both applied for psychology at uni. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, exactly the same. Yeah, I'm Jess. I'm doing biology, chemistry and psychology the same. And yeah, I want to do psychology at uni too.
I'm Dr. Jo Muller. I'm a clinical psychologist and I work predominantly with parents at the moment. But as I guess we'll talk about, as a clinical psychologist, I'm trained to work with people across the lifespan, supporting them with their mental health.
What courses did you study at uni?
So at university, I actually did a natural sciences degree at Durham University. And that was because when I was applying for university, I decided that I wanted to study psychology and maths together. So I'd applied to some courses that were joint honours and to some that were natural sciences, where you can kind of choose two or more subjects. So actually in my first year I wanted to take physics, but it clashed, so I took some philosophy modules, but yeah, ended up doing psychology and maths. And the reason I chose that at university was not because I actually thought I was going to be a psychologist at all. I really hadn't thought that far ahead, to be perfectly honest, but and I didn't study psychology at A level either. I did maths and physics and drama. And I just picked the subjects that I liked and that I was good at, basically. And then when it came to thinking about applying for an undergraduate degree, I thought, well, I really like maths, but I don't want to do like all maths. And I like science, but I actually like people. And I suppose the drama element, you know, I'm sort of interested in people. And I was like, but I like science. And I was like, if only there was a science that it was about people. What's this? Psychology. So I thought, I'll hedge my bets a bit. I'll do psychology and I'll do maths together. So that's what I did, and I loved it, and yeah, it was brilliant.
Did you find that psychology and I expect probably maths, were they quite male dominated at university?
Maths was, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there were a fair few girls doing maths, but definitely more boys. Psychology, I think, was more women studying psychology. So it was sort of nice to have that dichotomy, really. Yeah,
I feel like our chemistry and biology classes are like, biology is quite mixed, but chemistry male dominated, and our psychology is mainly women. Mm-hmm. But we've actually, in psychology at the minute, we've been studying the invisibility of women in psychology. And like, although that a lot of women are studying psychology, like when you Google famous psychologists, they're all white men, which is really interesting, because obviously women are studying psychology, but they're not necessarily getting the recognition, which...
It's fascinating, isn't it? That's amazing that you've got a module about that. That's fantastic.
And not only not getting the recognition, but there's a lot of research that says on average, women don't go as far in their careers as men because of the environment they work in. Do you experience that, Jo? Have you found it difficult to be a woman in your job?
The barriers are really similar to the barriers in pretty much all careers, which is that, you know, if you choose to have children and you're able to have children, you have a family, the opportunities for working flexibly can be challenging, particularly, you know, if you work in the NHS. I think things may be slightly better, but I do know a lot of women, a lot of colleagues and friends who have left the NHS because the working patterns were just not flexible enough for them to be able to look after themselves and their families, as well as looking after their clients and patients, which is sort of devastating when you've spent your career training to do that and you desperately want to do it, but the structures are set up against you, because, you know, the reality is that on the whole, women still do more of the childcare in many families. And yeah, that's kind of the reality of it. There's a little bit of a kind of ceiling where maybe men, not all men, not all women, but like as a general rule, men sort of are more likely to stay and kind of progress into the more senior positions, whether that's clinically or whether that's in an academic, you know, research environment. Whereas maybe women are more likely to start working part-time or leave the NHS altogether. But I think there are other factors involved as well in terms of how well women sort of feel prepared to sort of push themselves forward and put their name on things, whereas men maybe, you know, again, this is, I hate to generalize, I'm a psychologist, I like to talk in grey areas, but, you know, perhaps men are more willing to kind of push themselves forward and put their names on things.
I was going to say, in psychology, we've been studying Loftus and Palmer's. We talk about how we all immediately assumed they were both male, and how, like, with a lot of research papers, when I'm doing, like, competitions and that, I'm always assuming, like, they're male all the time, which I think is just really quite
interesting. We have this activity, because obviously a lot of, like, psychologists' name is, like, the first, like, initial, which is their surname, and we, like, had to guess, like, what gender they were, and, like, you just assume, like, even us, like, we just assume that they're male, which, yeah, they're not.
You get, like, an exam question, you'll see, like, the psychologist says this, and even in my head I'm like, oh, it's a male, but yeah. I don't know why.
And it's fascinating. I mean, there's a whole psychology of that, and how these messages are just completely indoctrinated in us from being children, you know, really little. I've got young children myself at the moment, and I'm just hyper aware of it, of the kinds of things that they internalise. And I used to do things like change the pronouns in nursery rhymes and in kind of books. And people, you know, I had friends, you know, mocking me, like, why are you doing that? And changing, you know, Polly called the doctor, that one. And I would change the doctor to a woman. And actually, I've done it so much that when I imagine that nursery rhyme now, I actually imagine a woman in my head. And my children will imagine a woman. And, you know, it felt, to some people thought that was a bit petty, but to me it's not petty, because it's these messages that build up in our brains to the point where, you know, you are where you are, and you're still making those assumptions even though you don't want to, you know. So
do you find it, like, difficult to, like, not bring parts of, like, your job home, like, the things, like, stay with you? And if they do, like, how do you kind of manage that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And when I was really lucky that the training course that I trained on, it's the Salomons course, it's at Canterbury Christchurch University, but it's based in Tunbridge Wells. And the course is sort of known in the clinical psychology world for being one of the more reflective courses. And that's, so it's not just focused on, like, teaching you how to assess patients for different mental health difficulties and treat, but it's also a lot about self-reflection and learning about yourself and being able to kind of, yeah, look after yourself and regulate yourself, I guess, and cope with some of the difficulties that you will kind of come up against with the clients that you're working with. The kinds of cases that we would see were sometimes, you know, really were distressing and difficult. And there is a reality that sometimes you will, you know, will take it home with you. Yeah, I think it's a balance of kind of accepting that to a little bit of an extent, but having tools to be able to manage it and not let it kind of take over.
I also was interested in the difference, like, being a clinical psychologist, like, within the NHS and then also privately.
That is a really good question. For me, I wouldn't have wanted to work privately without having worked as a clinical psychologist in the NHS for a long period of time. So I worked in the NHS for 10 years before I moved into the private space. And that was partly because of family circumstances, including, you know, a move and having children. But the NHS is fantastic, and there's some absolutely fantastic clinicians working in the NHS. And if I hadn't have had that experience working in that multidisciplinary team, having really, really good supervision, having lots of kind of professional development opportunities, just seeing the kind of volume of cases and that, having that clinical practice for that amount of time, I think I would struggle in private practice to provide a quality service. I mean, it's like anything, like, the more you do it, the better you. And in private practice, you have to put all those structures around yourself. So you have to find ways to work with other clinicians. You have to find your own supervision. You have to make your own professional development opportunities. You have to make sure, put those things in place to make sure that you're providing a quality service. And of course, some, those things are mandated if you're registered with the Health Care and Professions, HCPC, because you have to keep up those things in order to still be registered with them, in order to practice. But I think to know what good looks like, you know, it was very helpful to work in that more structured environment with those people around you.
I'm particularly interested in working with children. I did my work experience at a primary school, so that's something I definitely want to go into. But I was just wondering if there's like any particular challenges that you find with working with children in particular.
Yeah, I mean, working with children is fantastic, and I do miss it. But in terms of challenges, yeah, but it's kind of two sides of a coin, isn't it? Because the challenges are sort of the good things about it. You know, children are, yes, you have to sort of adapt your communication, and you have to really think about how you can get concepts across in a really creative way. But that's the fun part, you know, that's the fantastic part about it. You can be very creative, and children are so much more insightful than adults sometimes. You know, they really can take on ideas quite quickly. Difficult often is with the network around the child rather than working with the child themselves. That's where often the complexity, and yes, you can as a psychologist, you can have a 1 hour session a week with a child, but really the difference is going to be made outside of that 1 hour, you know. So it's working with parents, it's working with schools, it's working with social care involved. That's the opportunity, and that's why I love working with parents, because if I can help parents, then parents help children and the whole family. So for me, it's like a kind of the biggest impact. But it can also be frustrating if there are difficulties in that network, if parents are unable to make changes, or if, you know, the support you need from social care isn't there, for example, because social care is so badly underfunded. You know, if the support isn't there from schools because schools are so badly underfunded, you know, it can be sort of difficult and frustrating if, you know, you're trying to help a child, but you can sometimes feel a bit impotent if you can't make changes in the wider network.
And would you ever go into like different areas of psychology, or are you focused on clinical psychology?
That is the brilliant thing about clinical psychology, and one of the reasons that I wanted to train as a clinical psychologist, because as a clinical psychologist, you can do pretty much anything. It's like the training is broad, but it has depth. So you train to work with children, up to adults, up to older adults, people with learning disabilities, people with all kinds of different mental health problems, up to, you know, very severe difficulties, but also more sort of common day-to-day well-being type issues. You're trained to, when you do the doctorate, the reason it's a doctorate is because it has a significant research component, like a PhD, but it's balanced with the clinical work. So you're trained to do academic work, assessment and therapy. You can work, you know, in the media. You can disseminate psychological ideas on a much wider scale. You can, there's so many ways that you can use your psychological training as a clinical psychologist. So for me, that was the flexibility of that, the different client groups, the different types of work. You know, for example, I also work with the International Paralympic Committee. So I assess Paralympic athletes who have intellectual impairments. So I'm part of the process of making sure they're eligible to take part in the Paralympics. I mean, that isn't something that I necessarily anticipated doing, being involved in that sort of sporting world. But again, it's something that I've been working in for the last 10 years, and it's a really developing field. So I guess what I'm saying is there's not much restriction once you have that solid training. And yes, it is quite a long path to get qualified as a clinical psychologist, but once you're there, you've got a lot of choices about how you spend your career. And you know what, you can change your mind. So you don't have to, you know, just do one thing for your whole career. You can mix it up.
Do you find that working as a clinical psychologist ever makes you think about yourself differently?
For me, and I think part of what's made me a better psychologist is really as I said before, you know, connecting with other people, learning what other people's lives are like, really sort of getting out and away from just your experience, whatever it is. I did a year abroad in Canada, and I worked in a summer camp there for children with emotional behavioural difficulties, and just experiences like that. Maybe be a little bit less bothered about your own grades and your friends and whatever you're doing, and sort of get out there, you know, maybe volunteer, go and do something different. Yeah, because those experiences, I think, what breed that sort of compassion and understanding of other people.
Do you have any like specific role models that you look up to?
I was thinking about this question before the podcast, because I've heard, you know, on other podcasts people be asked this, and like, you know what, it's actually a really hard question, because there's so many sort of famous psychologists that I could say. What I was thinking was, really, I think in life what matters is the people we connect with in real life. They're the people that really genuinely influence us the most, I think. And so I think the boss that I mentioned before, Professor Lorraine Scher, who I worked with for, I think it was about 3 years, really at the beginning of my career, she was just a fantastic mentor and role model. You know, she was a very successful clinical psychologist, but she also, she did so much. She did research, she ran conferences, she did clinical work, but she included me in everything she was doing. So everything she did, she really put kind of a lot of faith in me to do things. And she really pushed me to do this research project in South Africa. We did a project in Norway. We wrote papers, and she really pushed me to kind of be the first author on papers that we were writing. And so I looked up to her not only as a really good clinical psychologist and mentor, but just also the way that she was, you know, empowered women empower women, that sort of mentality that even though I was young and even though I was inexperienced, she was really pushing me up, you know? And so I kind of see that, and I want to be able to do the same thing if I can, because I really, really valued, really, really valued that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the STEM Untapped podcast. If you liked this episode, you can subscribe for free on your podcast app. You can also find more from us on Instagram at STEM Untapped and our website untappedinnovation.com/STEM-untapped. See you next time.